It's Wednesday, June 16th, 2010, and you're listening to episode 194 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is John.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
And my name's Pat.
I'm here.
Welcome back, John. It's good to have you for a week, even if we're going to lose you again.
Thanks. It feels good. So yeah, you are going to lose me.
So how many scumbags have you put away so far?
Thousands.
How many
cleaning up
people
the streets.
Have you put away?
Like two or three. But, you know, you can't make an omelet without killing people, like I've always said. No, I just pretty much roam the Missouri River now, searching for convicts.
Nice.
Driving drunk, stealing earrings from Macy's, you know, I will find you. And I will slap you with a fine that you won't pay. And then 6 months later, you'll get picked up for something else. And then you'll really be in trouble because the judge will hate you.
Mm-hmm. So you're pretty much just doing what you always do.
Yeah, pretty much.
So it would have been
now
easier.
Now I get paid for it, and I'm sort of certified by the bar to do it.
Sort of, kind of.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So while John's been off doing something meaningful.
Like serving our society or something.
Mm-hmm. Wayne, would you like to confess where you spent today?
I spent today in Metropolis, Illinois for the Superman celebration. My third time being there, fifth time being in the town.
I've been in Metropolis once or twice. I don't judge you.
I stopped in the gas station in Metropolis on the way out. That's all we did, just gas station and out.
Did you get super unleaded?
No.
Wow. You know, I was really disappointed, though. I had my video camera there, and I was looking...
You had your video camera?
Actually, I did. I had both my video camera and Chad's video camera there, and I was looking for crimes against spandex. The things that you should not see, and I couldn't find it. I wanted to get video so I could put it online.
Okay, so...
And I couldn't find
Wayne,
it.
Wayne, we know what Superman is. We know what festival is. Most people don't know what Metropolis, Illinois is. What is the Superman Festival in Metropolis, Illinois?
Well, Metropolis, Illinois is just, it is the only metropolis in the U.S. It's a small town in Illinois, and they at one point decided, okay, we need something for tourists, and they made themselves the official home of Superman. They got this written down, they talked to DC Comics, they made a big deal out of it, and then they've been doing a celebration ever since. For the past 31 years, they've done a celebration every year just for Superman. And it's a small town, so it's one of those little, you know, just basically a small town festival with a giant 15-foot Superman statue and now a Lois Lane statue. And they've got live music going. They've got Superman Jeopardy. They hire a Superman, an actor, to come and play Superman in their town and do really corny dramas and walk around their streets, basically. They do costume contests, dog costume contests, all of the crazy things you see at any convention just kind of roaming the
streets. Someone's got to be crypto.
That's right.
So this whole town just gets sad.
For 3 days, they just put on this big festival.
I think it's like sort of a small town country fair, only instead of like hog tying things and rodeos and who grew the biggest pumpkin in the year.
They washed up 80s rock bands.
Yeah, it's actually just superheroes.
That is like
with
a
Superman theme.
You know, that's
the best way to describe it. As far as town festivals go.
If you've ever enjoyed a county fair, a watermelon festival, an apple butter festival, whatever kind of festival, it's that. With all of the typical booths you would see there.
You know, they had a testicle festival in Olean, Missouri last weekend.
It's not that.
No. Well, plus, not everything can be.
Plus people walking around in superhero costumes.
This sounds like the most...
Celebrity signing autographs and things like that.
Celebrities were at Superman party?
This year they had the actress that played Kara, Supergirl from Smallville, and played on V.
Yeah, that's a B-list celebrity.
Yeah, in past years, they've had Christopher Reeve himself has been out there.
Not anymore.
Adam West has been out
too
there.
Too soon. Too soon.
Stop horsing around, Chad.
You know, I really took the fall for that joke.
Yeah, you did.
Paraplegic. I fear the boot's going to go as a podcast to this little fair next year. And we're going to have an Apple Jolly Rancher stand.
I don't get it.
Because it's green, Kryptonite.
Oh.
there's already green rock candy all over the place called Kryptonite.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Someone thought it's
oh,
that.
Darn.
Yeah.
Chad, you could be
guess
Lex.
We'll have to stay
You're
home
bald.
And drink and eat sushi instead like we did tonight.
Yeah, I guess I'll just have to put down a six-pack
of Mickey's. In all seriousness, though, I love that town. I've been there when they're not doing the festival as well. It's a small town.
In a Superman costume.
Well, no. I mean, I wore my Superman shirt.
You would wear
shirt,
a Batman costume.
We were trying
please.
To figure out, if it started raining, would you put your Batman poncho on? And if so, how would that have been received?
My Batman poncho was in the back seat. When I got out of the car, I had a conversation with my wife debating whether I wanted to wear it into town while not raining at all. I decided not to because I was wearing my jacket to keep from getting a sunburn. And I would say it would be as well received as a lot of the other costumes there. Last year, they had a aluminum foil Iron Man costume.
You know what I'm going to go as next year is Dr. Manhattan. Very completely authentic Dr. Manhattan.
You wouldn't need much blue paint.
No, I'm a pretty skinny guy.
I am kind of curious what their jail looks like, John, so I'll go with you.
I stand corrected. It's not Apple Jolly Ranchers. It's a blueberry sausage. But all righty, let's see. What's going on out in the gaming world? Adventure
Who cares?
I care.
Yeah, I have Adventure Week. It's called being the DM. Every week is Adventure Week.
Wow, that was really funny.
Shut up, Chad.
Wow, did John just pull a Fleet Week?
So, Adventure Week. There's another gaming podcast out there, just one, and it's called Dice Food and Lodging. And what they are doing is they are kicking off...
Isn't that Rodriguez?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I like that guy.
Yes, that is Tim Rodriguez. All right. Yes, yes, he is a good guy. And he comes out to Fear the Con and such.
Yeah,
and,
I know. Yeah, I've played with him. He's hilarious.
He's running something called Adventure Week, which is going to go from June 27th through July 3rd. And the idea is to help build the gaming hobby, doing something where he's kind of drawing a little bit of inspiration from like National Novel Writing Month or something like that. But the point is that during the course of that 1 week, June 27th through July 3rd, you are supposed to pick your favorite system, favorite setting, and write what is a complete usable adventure module for that game.
Unlike Nano, just don't do some fanfic crap.
Yeah, the idea here is that what
I've seen some really good 24-hour comics.
Yeah, I've actually read a few Nanos that are good. Some of them got published. Naturally not the fanfic ones. Yeah.
Well, like I said, you read a few.
Look, 10,000 monkeys, 10,000 typewriters, something's going
to
be good.
I think they should rename it to National Fanfic Month, because I think that's what the bulk of the stuff that gets put out in Nano is.
I'm actually a big supporter of Nano, because like most people won't take the time to write something. I know I have a hard time just sitting down and writing, and it gets people writing. Yeah, it produces fanfic, it produces a lot of crap, but it gets people writing, and it gets them on that habit. And yeah, I support it for that reason, because it gets people going.
I bought the NaNoWriMo book. I'll say it. All right, Dan, you were saying.
What is the NaNoWriMo book?
They wrote a book to like how to do a NaNoWriMo, and I read it, and I'm an idiot because I paid that guy money.
Wow.
Mea maxima culpa. All right.
That's like the old joke. John, you want to know how to get rich?
How?
Buy my book.
Exactly. You know how you make a small fortune in horse racing?
How's that?
Start with a large one. My dad tells me that as he's driving me to Arlington to go put down trifectas all day and lose both of us.
So anyway, getting back to Tim's thing, the idea is that you're supposed to write a complete adventure, and that the adventure should be sufficiently polished enough for release to other people. This is not supposed to be your scribblings of game notes, but this is supposed to be a product that is sufficiently finished for other people to actually use, which means if you've got access to artists or layout guys, and maybe even take this all the way through to a polished product that you end up putting out on drive-thru or something like that. If that's not possible, it's just you by yourself with MS Word, at least make sure it's usable so you can go and post this somewhere and people can download it and they can run it. And you're basically helping build a hobby by putting ideas out there for people to use, or mine on some level, to help enhance their games. I'll link something to this from the show notes where he's got more details, if he's got some suggestions regarding links and types of adventures and things like that.
So there's no central repository for the stuff? Doesn't Nano have a central repository?
Yes. Yeah, you but you can't just grab other people's stuff and read it there. I don't know.
Really? I'll do this game challenge thing. I'm going to put it right on the line right now. I'm going to do it.
What are you going to do for it?
I haven't decided yet. If you actually literally have to do your favorite system,
no,
then I have to do like Saga or 3.0 or 3.5. But I don't know. I'll probably write a Star Wars adventure. I might compile the Star Wars one shot that I ran at Fear the Con 3 into such a format that another human being could reasonably run it without having me there to explain it.
See, that's kind of my...
That might be cheating. Like, if that's not allowed, I won't do that.
I think this is a great idea. It's a really cool thing. I think I might have trouble doing it because it wouldn't be a matter of coming up with the adventure, but it would be coming up with an adventure that goes beyond writing just memory refreshers and sort of cliff notes.
That's the
you
thing.
Know, get it out of Chad speak to something that can be usable by other people.
Transmittable, articulable information I had going into that con game was maybe 10% of the content that actually happened out there.
Right.
And I think you and I are a lot like that, where we tend to run off the cuff rather than out of a book.
Yeah.
But I think if I were to see a purpose in actually writing that all out in black ink and to fulfill this contest, obviously you must.
Yes.
I could do that.
Yeah.
Or I could at least try to.
Like I said, I think that's a really cool idea.
I'd like to try. I don't know if I'm going to get in on this or not. I'd like to try. But I think for me, the biggest thing is going to be time. I don't know that right now I can give up the week to do it.
Well, how would you guys...
And production value is the other thing. I mean, I've read the blurb on this, and he's like, take it to a layout guy, take it to an artist, take it to a publisher. And I don't know about that.
Yeah, if I did, I definitely couldn't do that. I could put it into MS Word. I could make it look nice, make it legible, maybe get somebody to give me some art or grab some free royalty-free art or something like that that I could stick in there.
That's the thing about Nano, man. You just get your 12-pack of Natty Light and slam your forehead against a keyboard for half an hour, and then you've got a novel.
Man, is writing a Star Wars tabletop adventure any more noble or dignified than writing a Star Wars fanfic for Nano? I don't know. I think it is. But I couldn't tell you why.
Can you combine the
two? Probably only because I do it and I don't do Nanos.
Can you combine the two? Can you make a truly awful Star Wars adventure that is a fanfic?
Oh, yeah. Well, all Star Wars gaming is fanfic if you want to reduce it to what it is.
And if you do, you mix it a Klingon Green Lantern that just shows up.
Yeah. No, I don't do any of this cross-universe shit. No spell jammer, fog of Ravenloft, none of that.
How would
crap.
A spell jammer hold up against a Star Destroyer?
Shut up. Do you know how much, you know the forum thread you just started? You ass.
What if the Galad's going up against the Enterprise?
I hate that.
You know, the forums actually do make that noise. They actually go,
yeah, they do. So,
gaming topic for today.
Galactica versus Death Star.
Shut up.
What system would you use that in?
Exploding D6.
Totally throwing it in D&D.
What if Superman were piloting the Death Star? And what if Batman was piloting the Galactica?
Pilots the
no
Death
way.
Star,
you put, no, what if you're Superman? You're Superman. You can go so fast. You can fast travel between stations.
Grand Moff Tarkin would just put you in.
No way. I'm putting Flash on the Death Star, not Superman. Flash can outrun Superman.
Bullshit. It's always a tie.
But Flash would
They've
be...
done this before.
Flash would be...
God damn it. Dan, what's the topic?
Can Superman run through time? I
Shut
don't
up.
Think so. I've missed you, John.
I've missed this show. On the one hand, I really wish I was in St. Louis this summer so I could do this every week. On the other hand, I have, like, the best job a criminal lawyer law student could possibly get in this state, if not the country.
They're throwing money at you to put scumbags in the slammer, and you don't even have to pass the bar yet.
That's right. Which is really good.
All right, Dan, I think you better get to the role-playing time.
All right, so
I thought about putting money down on the table about whether this would make it as a regular episode or end up being bonus.
No, this will be a regular
episode. I think this will be a regular episode. So our main gaming topic for today is actually one that, believe it or not, kind of spins off from what we've been talking about, which is remote play gaming. And the reason this spins off is because we've been sitting here talking about Star Wars and Saga Edition. And right now, John is running a remote play Star Wars game.
That is correct. I am running a map tool Star Wars game.
And he's currently running this game. And before this was running a D&D game.
Yes, the Goblin game.
Yes, which I mentioned last episode. And since we have him in town, I'm going to do a quick aside this episode from what we've been talking about to talk about this instead, because this is something I've been wanting to actually talk about for quite a while. Way back when, I mean, years ago in our run, we did an episode on remote play. But since then, we've had some additional experiences.
I don't remember that.
Some new technologies have come up.
Yeah, I think I was hit on the head.
And so this is something that I'd like to revisit. Now, thinking about remote play gaming, I think there are three basic types of remote play. How you fix a problem or whether something even is a problem may heavily depend on the type of game that you're running. So here's the three types. The first one I'm just going to loosely call interval gaming, which is basically where you type out some text and then stop and walk away. Play by post, play by email. I write an action, somebody responds. It could be minutes, hours, days, weeks later before I have to write my next action.
I hate that.
The second is real-time text gaming, stuff like Map Tools, AIM. You are sitting there with something in front of you that is in real time, but is still being done via text or online tools, online tabletops.
Once again, I like that.
Map Tools is probably the most common of these.
Yeah, it's really good.
But it's not the only one that's out
there.
No,
it's not the only one, but it's good.
The third is real-time voice gaming. If you game over Skype, if you game over Ventrilo or TeamSpeak or something like that, or even over the
Roger phone, Wilco.
Does that even still exist?
I have no idea, but while we're naming VoIP clients, it's there.
If you take it to the ultimate extreme, like Wizard was telling us he did, where he called his brother who was driving across the country
over the phone.
In a diesel truck.
If you're doing this in front of a desktop computer or a laptop computer, obviously you could kind of merge the latter two in that you could do the discussion via Skype and yet still have an electronic tabletop you're playing on. But for the purposes of this conversation, we will call those types of games voice games because you still have that element of voice communication. You just have a visual aid to go along with it. All right, so let's get to the first biggest problem that has haunted John's games, has haunted every play-by-post game I have been.
Oh, I'm
going to
bitch
going
about this.
All the way back to the BBSs prior to people having internet access, which is attendance.
Yes, people think that online games are optional and that if they just don't feel like it tonight, they won't go. They sleep through it, they go out, they just don't show up. My Goblin game, I was shocked. Shocked in a good way. We had five players, and for probably half the sessions, all five of us were there. And for the rest of them, we had four. I really thought that I was the big swinging balls of the GM world because people showed up for my remote play game.
You know, and that's an issue with anything online. Anytime you try to organize things online, yeah, people just don't take it as seriously if they don't have to drive there in person.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Like, it's not just gaming. People have this perception that anything online is free. I mean, we've talked about this before. People also have this perception that anything online is optional. There's really going to be no horrible repercussions if I don't make it today. So I just won't.
Do you guys think it's the Penny Arcade's greater internet tard theory where it's,
you know,
the,
I really
you're distant,
don't.
You're anonymous.
There's no, distance. No. There's some perception of anonymity, but there really isn't. Like,
there's no consequence.
Everyone that I remote with, I know.
Yeah.
Like, I've met them in person with the exception of one person, but I trust him anyway.
Well, it isn't that it's anonymity. It's lack of consequence for actions.
Yeah.
There's no consequences is what not drives people away, but gets them from coming in.
I think there may be more peer pressure, too. Your buddy comes over, your buddy is there physically, and it leaves you wondering priority-wise, what's more important on my priority? This person that's actually here wanting to do something with me, or the people online?
Yeah, but how hard is it to just turn around and say, hey, Broseph, I'm not going out Wednesday night.
See, I've never understood that. I've never played in a remote play game, so maybe it would be different if I actually played in one. But, you know, when I played in MMOs, not to equate these games with MMOs, but just an example
they do have
of
something in common. Because still,
it's a social gathering
that you're doing online.
So
nobody busted his ass so you could go fight Ragnaros.
Well, and when I played WoW, I actually had people in my guild call me up and say, "Hey, we're raiding tonight. Where are you at?" But here's the thing: I had a rule when I played MMOs. I always said that real life people come before the game. So if I sit down to play an MMO to grind out whatever and fight this guy and do whatever, if somebody called me up and said, hey, Chad, do you want to go out tonight? My default answer would always be yes. Yes, I do want to go out tonight because I can see myself turning into that guy. Well, the thing is, I also had a caveat to that rule. If I were playing with real people, then I would tell the person who called, no, I'm in the middle of something. Not
and
because...
And by real people, you mean regular friends.
Regular friends.
Obviously, everybody you're playing with is a real person.
Yeah, you know, if I was a pickup group in the middle of Strat, and I was the main tank, and we were about to hit the last guy or whatever, and it was a bunch of pickup groups, yeah, I'd Hearthstone, and I'd be out there, so I'd go drinking at a bar. Screw those people. But if it were people I knew, people in my guild, or people I was friends with, like Dan and I were getting together to do this thing at an MMO at 7 o'clock tonight, and somebody said, hey, you want to go out, go bowling, you want to go to the bar or something? I would tell them no, even though I had that rule about real people first, because Dan is a real person, and Dan and I have something that we are planning on doing at a specific time.
Yeah, and I
see the same thing with this play-by-distance role-playing game. These are real people who are waiting
on
you.
And there's a whole nother level of rage when you're the dungeon master.
Yeah.
Who built the campaign, who walked everyone through character creation, who made the damn maps, and then Fred McAbsentee doesn't show up, and one other Fred McAbsentee doesn't show up, and then you have lost a critical mass.
You know what?
I got pissed off last week when we couldn't run. I was grumpy that day anyway. I don't remember why, but...
In a group in an MMO, they can say, oh, well, Chad's main tank, Chad's healer, Chad's DPS, he couldn't make it because he's a douche. Douchebag, they get a little pissed off at me, but you know what? LFG.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
LFP, looking for player.
In tabletop, it's, this guy was at the cliffhanger scene at the end of last game. He's one of four of the only people in the world that are playing characters in this game.
Yeah, you can't,
we can't replace
him. Random guy.
We're going to throw it in today, try to schedule another one in between now and next week, and hope everyone shows up next week.
I think a closer comparison would be like when I used to do the competition with FPSs, where you couldn't just do a looking for group thing. You couldn't grab someone on. You had to have people that were already registered on your team and had all of that set. I would run into that issue back then of, I would tell people, okay, I have a match scheduled for this time. I can't go out and do something. And then you get the peer pressure of, come on, it's just online.
No,
it's
that's when you got to tell them to blow
and
a goat.
Yeah, I never missed a match because of that. See, and I know we were all great about it at the time, but that was always an issue. People just don't seem to get that. And it's because they don't understand it. They don't understand that these are real people on the other end. It's not just, I'm on a computer.
Well, I think it's and this is going to sound absolutely ridiculous to say, I think it's a matter of etiquette. It's a matter of internet etiquette, both online and off. When you're online, you have to have the etiquette that this is not your end-all and be-all of your life. You have to get out. You have to get away from the computer. Real people who are not online are real people. But the offline people need to understand internet etiquette, too. And saying that these other people who are online, even though I don't see them, even though they're not face-to-face, even though they might be 1,000 miles away, are still real people.
Yeah, you are ruining their day by not showing up.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think from a player's perspective, it's easier to ditch out for the reasons we've talked about. It feels like less of a commitment. Mm-hmm. It may not be played with people that you've met face-to-face. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. Depends on the situation.
You're more likely to have peer pressure to back out.
And on top of that, I think another thing that figures into it is it's too easy to schedule. And being too easy to schedule makes it too easy to violate. And what I mean by that is, for example, I know that with our Sunday game, our regular game, there's an evening I am going to be gone. In my head, I have blocked out this whole stretch of time where I'm not going to be here. I have to get in my car, drive down to Dave's house, meet you guys by a certain time, play for a certain length of time, and I will be back within this vague shotgun on the clock. But when I look at like John's game, I don't have to go anywhere. If I have a pressing deadline with work, I mean, of course, I have to pay attention to the game, but I can alt-tab back and forth since it's a map tool thing. Well, if I know somebody's talking out and they're going through six lines of a speech or something like that, it's going to take them a few minutes to type it. So I can alt-tab over and I can take care of a little something. And as a result, it stops feeling like a social commitment. And because it stops feeling like a social commitment, someone may ask me to do something on Wednesday. And it's not a matter of you're losing out as a priority. It's a matter of it doesn't even occur to me. It just does not register in that mental radar, and it ought to, for the very reasons you've given. I think people take for granted there's real people on the other end that have invested real time in setting this up who may rely on this as their only outlet for the hobby. We get emails from tons of people at Fear the Boot. Probably the number one category of email I receive, if I was to start putting them into piles, is, I like your show because I'm isolated in the middle of nowhere, don't have a gaming group, have nobody to game with, and you guys are my best outlet and expression for the hobby. So there may be tons of people out there where, unlike me, this is not a supplemental game. This may be their only game. And by handling this as a non-priority, I'm not just screwing the GM. I may be screwing the other players out of what for them is a vital social experience or perhaps their only outlet for enjoying the hobby.
Yeah.
So here's the question. Outside of raging, what do you do to make people take this more seriously?
Dan, you put the commissar hat on, and if you say, you know, you miss one more time, Broseph, your slot's out.
Yeah, and after you do that a few times, you get a good core of people. Mm-hmm. You know, basically, back in the FPS days, if we had people that didn't show up, they simply were dropped. It was a matter of, these are your friends, you still want to hang out with them, but if you can't rely on them to be there, then they're a hindrance to what you're trying to do.
I think something else that might help, at least with some people in some situations, is just reminders. Because those reminders help keep it at the front of your mind, help remind you that there's a real person behind this. For example, John, with your game, the Star Wars one, I missed the first one because I didn't even know it was occurring.
Have you ever had anybody hit you up to be in their game and you do not want to be in their game? Either the game is filled with that guy, or it's just a type of game that you're not interested. Maybe it's a power game and you're into RP.
It's so,
maybe you're a power
so
game and it's RP.
It's hard
game.
To say, hey, no thanks, give your slot to someone else so he'll show up.
Well,
it just breaks your heart.
It's a peer pressure and social thing. When somebody asks you face-to-face to do something, it's hard for the average human being to say no. I love telling people no, but, you know, for other people, it's very hard. It's a social thing.
You don't want to sound like a dick. You don't want to come off as, well, no, I'm not going to play in this game because you're running it and you suck.
And
but
you smell bad, and your house smells like cat
piss. Can't you realize that it's better for everyone if you just straight up and say, no, I'm not going to play, give my invitation
that
to someone else?
That is very true and very logical. And completely irrelevant when you're talking about social situations.
But it doesn't seem that hard to me. You just simply, no. I don't have time for this right
in
now.
In theory, it's not. In theory, it's very easy to look at the facts, to do a cost-benefit analysis.
At the one dude that's like, yeah, I'm in. Week one doesn't show. Week two doesn't show. Week three doesn't show. So,
yeah.
Do I give the guy's chair away or not? What the hell?
And I totally feel for you. And
okay.
Both of you are absolutely and totally correct. But doing a logical cost-benefit analysis, balance, how do I diplomatically break it to this guy that I don't want to be in the game, and it's a social pressure thing, and I don't want to cause unnecessary drama, and I don't want to make anybody feel bad. I hate to say that it rises
to the level of moral cowardice, but I would certainly argue that it rises to the level of social cowardice.
All right, well,
I mean, this is the guy or the girl that just treats you like shit for a couple months until you dump her, rather than straight up saying, you know, I'm done with this. This is a bad way to do things.
John, do you know
welcome
my
to America.
Before I got married?
Welcome to the human race. Yeah. Yes, every single point you're throwing at me to argue this, I 100% agree with.
Well, my argument is grow the F up. Don't hide behind this. Well, this is how people are.
And yes, that is, in fact, how people are. A lot of people.
Well, let's get off of the rage soapbox right here and get back to what are some things as a game master you can do.
Flip the table over and start raging again.
That's right.
Well, does this affect, for example, how you write the game? Can you write the game in advance knowing, okay, perhaps on some level people ought to be there, but knowing the reality is...
Yeah, I mean, I went to game two of Star Wars unable to proceed because I ended game one on an awesome cliffhanger that really required everyone to be in the room when the camera started again. I mean, I was going to start the camera rolling 5 seconds after I stopped it in the last game.
Right.
If I had gone with a more modular episode design, perhaps sacrificed this feeling of, oh my god, I've got to see what next, in exchange for being able to say, and Sally is in her apartment this session, therefore we're going to proceed with the rest of you three. Maybe I could have run it. Do you GM with one hand behind your back with regards to suspense so that you can pick up and go with any mixture of the people you've got on hand?
I think you do. I think you have to, because as much as we're talking about raging and and people not showing up and how pissed off that makes us, people have lives. It happens.
People have lives, but
I mean, tell me.
Holy crap.
Take your kid to the emergency room. Sorry, I'm not gaming, and you know what? You're lucky if I call you, because I got bigger things going on.
Well, and this is something that I've
not
just...
I don't game with people who take kids to emergency rooms. I game with people who are...
Well, and I think in one regard, where if you are doing either of the latter two categories of remote play, both of which being real-time, real-time text, real-time voice, you have something of the advantage of at least you know the game will occur in blocks. You're going to run a certain number of hours tonight, and either somebody will be there or they will not. And so you can write the game in a certain way based on who is going to be there, or you know, handle it in a certain way based on who's going to be there. Where this gets a little more tricky is in things that are like play by post or play by email, where you're in the middle of a conversation with somebody and all of a sudden they just stop showing up on the forums, mm-hmm. or they just stop answering their email for whatever reason. Who knows why? I mean, people just flake out and disappear from internet communities all the time. Everybody's got a different reason why. It doesn't matter. But you may be stuck there, not just at a cliffhanger, but the middle of an exchange.
You know,
it is your turn to hit the cobalt, and you never get a reply.
There's always one guy in the fantasy league that drops like a week into it.
I'll say again, I've never played a distance game of any kind, much less a play-by-post. But in seeing the handful of games on our Fear the Boot forums, and also talking to people who do play a lot of play-by-post things, and what they've told me is that that's a majority of what happens to the games.
Oh, absolutely.
It is very, very rare.
The commanding majority.
Yes, it is very rare to get through a game without people just vanishing from the face of the planet.
You know, before I had ever heard of the term role-playing game, back in my BBS days, I ran we called it a fantasy wrestling league. But this was actually just basically a role-playing thing. Everyone created characters. Their characters had stats. They picked abilities. I was running this thing, and how I would deal with that is if, when a person quit posting, something bad would happen to their character, and their character would go away. And the people that posted more, they got more spotlight. And yes, I just admitted to running a fantasy wrestling.
Fear the Boot has never had a true segment where, like, we have little intro music to something and then somebody gets 5 minutes and we have exit music for it. I think we are going to change that, and we're going to add Wayne's awkward confession. It's going to be a weekly segment where Wayne gets
weekly.
To spend 3 minutes. Well, because we record the show weekly. He's got 3 minutes to tell us about all the things he's...
Yeah, Wayne, life is pretty awkward.
Love dropping these because I love the look on Dan's face when I say something.
The Basement Wrestling League, online wrestling games,
what blows my mind.
Fangs.
There is a Batman poncho.
What blows my mind is the possibility that Wayne seriously does have at least 52 awkward moments he could lay on us over the course of a year.
Oh, I have.
I bet I could come up with them.
Yeah, he cooks new ones up. I mean, look at this Metropolis thing.
Here's the problem with the segment, though, Dan. I would miss out on you stopping the conversation for it. There is nothing that fills me with satisfaction more than saying something and suddenly seeing you go, whoa, wait a minute.
Fine, maybe we'll let you pick. You'll be like, and I did the family dog. And then we'll stop and be like, Wayne's awkward confession. Wow. Da, 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 da. Wayne's awkward confession. And then we can pick up with me going, stop.
It's
what?
We need a record album going like,
I mean,
and
you should
like,
know that.
Huh?
Yeah, yeah. It goes as it is live, and it's all in post-production. So it's going to be a gold mine.
All right. So next possible issue, and this is one that I think is going to be a bigger problem in interval gaming, play-by-post, play-by-email, than either of the real-time ones, which is the speed at which the plot moves.
Yeah, oh my god, forum games are slow as hell.
Forum games and email games are both extremely slow. I think it's a...
Is that a bad thing?
Yes.
Yes, for a couple reasons. One, it gets harder to keep people locked in. It's harder for people to jump in, because a GM feels compelled to write out a scene or to write out an encounter, and you can't jump in the middle of it and say, wait a minute, second sentence in out of your 3-paragraph post, I would have responded to that. And that changes everything. And so it is...
I think that the expectations are different as far as just the speed goes. Let's assume the perfect game.
Okay.
Where we assume that everybody shows up from beginning to end and there's very little disruption and it's a good game. I think that the expectation is different. People would want a slower game that takes time. This is something that if you were sitting down and playing it out, it would just be a short campaign. It would only take like a month or two, whereas this takes 3 years. And like I said, the expectation's different. It's weird. It's like when we were talking about playing Diplomacy. Or you and I talked about playing play-by-email Civ before.
Right.
And one of the things that we both brought up was, this game is going to take 4 freaking ever. And my view was, well, that's the point. It's not that this is going to be a slow Civ game, but this is going to be a good, long, play-by-email game. I wouldn't want normal Civ, where I'm just playing it by myself or against another player at a LAN party, to be this slow.
Right.
I got pig iron. I got all pig iron.
Beep. Beep.
You know, that might be true. That might be what the expectation is, but I think the reality of it, once it sets in, is that it is just a lot slower than you think it will be. And I think you hit the nail on the head with your...
Well, I think it's a lot slower than we think it will be.
Well, with your diplomacy example, I mean, you guys went to that with one expectation of slowness, and it turned out to be like 10 times magnitude slower. And I think that's what will kind of kill it, because even if you are thinking of it being more slow, when it's painfully slow, and that's going to lead to your people just dropping off the face of the earth because I don't know how to fix this. It's too slow. I'm bored. I'm gone.
And that's a preference thing, too. We were doing the diplomacy thing, and we were complaining about how short it is. I know someone that played diplomacy where they did one turn a week. That is it. And they would email all week, and they would really get into it, and they would... The games would last for years.
You want to talk about rage quitting? Holy crap. Diplo is like the original Left 4 Dead as far as rage quitting goes.
You know, it's funny because we're complaining about three-day turns. These guys played it for years and loved it. No problem doing one turn a week.
You know, I guess maybe then in some regard, that's the advice draw to this point, is there really is nothing you can do to speed this up. I think the game master has to be prepared to shorthand some things, to adjust to people's quote-unquote interrupt actions, which really can't interrupt the moment and such. And there's some little skills you'll have to pick up, but I think really there just needs to be an expectation on the part of the players that, look, this game's going to move slower. I'm going to have to surrender a little bit of control of my character, just because in order for the GM to type out a scene, he can't necessarily play 20 questions with me on the fly, because it'll just drag out forever. But that attitude, I think, really has to pervade at least the first type of gaming, and maybe the second one as well, of real-time text gaming. Because there's a delay in terms of typing, and there's also no social cues. You don't see the game master sitting there looking at everyone expectantly. So it may take you a moment to even realize the game master's done describing something. There were several times in the Goblin game where I wasn't clear if a person, whether it was the game master or another player, was done or not. And so I noticed that even within that text game, it was moving a lot faster than play-by-post or play-by-email would. But it was still something where, by the end of the night, we had done half, maybe a quarter, of what would have been accomplished in that amount of time around a tabletop.
You really do not have to prepare as much content because you go more slowly. That said, I think it's a much better alternative than forum games, even given all of the stumping I did about people not showing up earlier.
This may sound kind of silly, but if you're people talking like in radio traffic or on CBs and stuff like that, when they're done with the sentence, they end it with something like, you know, over or whatever else like that to indicate, I'm done talking. Yeah. It's for you now.
Maybe, that might be like an over
if
in
you
text.
If you could come up with something like that, that time, could help with what you're saying.
UPCs and I, the GM, intuited, you know, when it was time for you to talk, when it was time for me to provide more objective description so that you would know what's better going on.
You know, when Dan and I played Mushes and Muds and all that, we played on ones that were all combat, but we also and all automated, and then we also played on ones that had almost no automation whatsoever and were almost completely role-playing, like the Shadowrun Muse.
There's a mush.
Mush?
Yeah.
The Shadowrun Mush.
Mushes are really fluid.
Yeah, and they had a thing where it would just be self-policing role-playing for most of it, but when you need a GM, you can call one to do things. And one of the cool things that the GMs had that I always thought was neat is they call it a time stop. It was a quote-unquote object that they quote-unquote threw on the ground, and it I don't think it actually did anything.
No, it didn't do anything.
But it just said that even if you do things beyond this point, they don't count. You can pull your gun out and blow somebody's head off. If you do it after the time stop,
when the time stop is down, things go to turns. But outside of that, things were running fluid. But John, you were
I think that's a good idea in a physical tabletop game.
You're talking about how the game moving slower gives you the benefit of, as a game master, you can sometimes get away with producing a little bit less content simply because less will occur. And if something happens, you have more time to think about it.
Yes.
If it's text, you may have a few extra seconds or moments to think about it because nobody's sitting there looking at you. If it's a play-by-email, play-by-post, I mean, you could take hours or even days mm-hmm. to think about it.
And that is the other side of the coin. While we didn't get through perhaps as much prepared plot as we would have all got around a table, whenever one of you guys forced me to improvise, which was often, as I liked it, I could really sit there for 2 or 3 minutes before anybody's eyebrows raised and think, okay, what is going to be the most fun encounter that can come of this? How can I artfully dovetail this in with the greater goal or a theme of the campaign? I've got everyone's character backgrounds right here. How can I make this related directly or subtly toward something that a player has told me about his PC's history or personality? And I think because the Goblin game was so player-directed, I think it only could have been as player-directed as it was because I got 5 times as much time to think on the fly because of the medium of text rather than the medium of voice.
So, John, out of the curiosity there, when you're running something like that and you run into those situations, do you have a problem with a lack of tone? Like we've talked about many times, if you're on a forum and an email, everything you say comes out the same way.
Yeah,
you don't have joking inflection, you don't get any of that. Does that come up?
I don't think bald-faced joke was ever mistaken for an actual ruling description.
At least in that game, I don't think it ever was a problem in GM to player communication. I did get the sense it was a problem in player-to-player communication. Since that game had a certain amount of tension and uncertainty within the party, especially when a new character was introduced, such as when mine died and got replaced, yes, that it oftentimes did take the other players to figure out precisely what a character was like. That a character would come on the scene and the other players would be uncertain, okay, is this someone I should like? Is this someone who's aggressive? Was that sarcasm? And so it does take a lot for the player-to-player communication to work well. And I could imagine extrapolating from that, that you could just as easily, even though it didn't come up in our game, end up in a situation where an NPC-to-PC communication is equally garbled.
Yeah, and you just have to lay on the adverbs and ignore every convention of writing you've ever heard. And,
yes.
And
lots
really,
of adverbs and emotes.
Yeah, even go so far as to perhaps dictate the sort of impression that a particular character is giving out. Now, you don't want to say, you, Dan, are scared of this orc, but I would go ahead and say that this orc is menacing. He says this thing in a manner that is intimidating. You have to violate a little bit of show, don't tell. Mm-hmm. You have to tell because you don't have tone.
You know, the flip side, though, to that coin is
the original side?
Yeah, we're back to the original side, okay. I guess, mm-hmm. is that there is an additional burden of pre-production in these games that is not present in a tabletop game, or at least can be present because of the nature of the tools. For example, if we're playing a game where we're all sitting around the living room table and you guys decide to go into a certain place, I can put down my tactiles, take out my dry erase marker, and just doodle it up as we need it. If you're playing on something like map tools and they go to a particular place, you may need to pull a map out of your ass.
And they do have doodling tools and grids and stuff on map tool, but I take your point and I accept it because I think that's sort of cheap. When we had set piece encounters in the Goblin game, I presented you guys with a map that occasionally I designed myself, but more often than not, I stole off the internet and altered.
I'll say, or even if you weren't using a map, and obviously maps did come up a lot, but if you weren't using a map, if you want to insert slides to kind of show, okay, this is kind of what this mountain range looks like or whatnot, or this is what this monster
Google
looks like.
Google image search on another tab always.
Yeah, exactly. And so there is a certain amount of additional pre-production I think you have to do.
There is.
Or at least can be there that does not go into a tabletop game. And I don't think that's always going to be the case because, as you said, there are some tools that are easier to work with than others. And if you're doing something that's pure text or pure voice, well, then in that case, it doesn't matter because there's no visual aids anyway. But if you have tools you're trying to work with for a virtual tabletop, that may take some legwork.
And a lot of it has been done before, too. I mean, you want the color dragon animal in or, you know, spaceship number 7023. It's already gridded up on the internet.
Oh, and there's also a learning curve, because the fact is, like any program, there is some learning curve of figuring out the tools.
So speaking of learning curve, you guys are taking something for granted that personally, I don't know what it is. What is map tools?
What map?
You guys have said a lot. I'm sure other people out there are wondering the same thing.
Okay, and this is
a tool that uses maps. Continue.
Yes, it's a text client IRC style. It's a chat room with an onboard dice roller and a map grid that allows you to import pictures to use as maps, and it has a grid on it. And you can use pictures as tokens and move them around. Actually, if you really want to get into the bowels of it and program it, you can, like, program the rules for a tabletop RPG system right there in there. So all you have to do is dictate your actions and your dice, and it just does everything.
And people even
I don't go that far, but...
People even use it in face-to-face tabletop games where they get projectors projected on a wall or even projected down onto a table.
Yeah, it's at its heart, it's just a virtual tabletop.
Yeah.
And but you,
isn't there a program called Virtual Tabletop?
I'm going to admit some degree of ignorance in that.
No. These, we're Fear the Boot. We know.
It's called Fear the Bootle Top.
Yeah. Pretty nice. Much just being agnostic of what the tool is and what it does.
There are a lot
when
of
when you first started talking about this game with John, that was the first question I had is how do these tools work? What do they do? And that's why I was really asking what Map Tools was. I think you guys have done a good job of explaining it now
and
what it offers.
Whoever was asking about whether there's something called Virtual Tabletop, there are a fair number of programs out there right now, and there are a whole lot more that have come and gone over the years. If you want a current catalog, I can't give it to you. All I can tell you is in the circles I run in Map Tools is the standard.
And the only reason I run Map Tool is because everyone else runs it, and it is pretty easy for a GM to set up a combat or visually striking set piece encounter while at the same time having a text field with a dice roller.
Now, that brings up something else, though, which is issues of trust or even issues of ignorance. Let me give you an example. When we were playing the D&D game as goblins, I knew how to create a character in D&D 3.5. Using the online SRD, I knew how to go out there and look up goblin and adjust my character, you know, to be of the goblin race.
And I had all of the house rules indexed on the wiki. This is all there.
So from a trust standpoint, if you're worried I was going to cheat on the die rolls, we could meet on a chat client and I can roll my attributes. Mm-hmm.
And I make everyone do that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's this trust but verify thing. Like, I trust absolutely every single one of the people in my game. I don't game with people I don't want to game with. But when it comes time to do dice, do it on the table. I'll do it on the table.
But in the case of the Star Wars game, I do not have Saga Edition Star Wars.
Right.
I have the D20.
Which is why I keep IMing you trying to make your character and you keep evading me.
But my point being, though, that this is one of those things where there's a difficulty in character creation because I can't just meet with you, roll a handful of dice. You will have to handhold me. And now, in this case, you and I can hop on a voice chat or even the phone to speed things up a bit.
Yeah.
But imagine if you're doing a play by post or play by email, and I am sitting there trying to get your character made via private messages.
Yeah, that'd be annoying.
And you can see how this would quickly really bog things down. And I think you could get around it a little bit by saying, okay, even if we're mostly going to do play by post, just this once, meet me on a text messenger so we can walk through this, or meet me on vent so we can walk through this. But
the most two-party process in all of gaming is character creation. I mean, the GM can always just keep the stick and force things through, but not in character creation. I mean, you've got to have the player's absolute input and consent with every step of that, in my opinion.
I will go ahead and link in the show notes at least three things for anyone that's interested in downloading any free programs you can use to help with this, which is Skype, Ventrilo,
and Bonzi Buddy.
And Map Tool, because Skype and Ventrilo are two really good voice chat clients. Skype is probably your easiest one to use. And then also Map Tool being the one we've talked about, I'll at least put a link out there for that.
So please do not Google Bonzi Buddy and download it.
No, do it.
No.
It comes free with Kazaa.
Yeah.
And also, if you are looking for a place to do play by post or play by email, there are a variety of internet communities dedicated to this. Hit Google, do a search on play by post or play by email, and you'll find gobs of hits.
Or just go to our forums.
That was what I was going to say. Is we have an entire section on our forums dedicated to play by post games.
And did you know that we actually have one game in our play by post section that started and finished?
Oh, really?
Yes, they completely finished the game.
My hat is off.
I love it when I finish.
I got nothing.
The Goblin game only went for about 10 sittings.
Hey, personally,
but I finished, and it was so satisfying.
Personally, I always finish. Everyone else may not, but I always finish.
See, I have the other problem.
And you're always first to the finish line,
too. I always start.
That is right.
And sometimes my players drop out in the process, but when I can finish, that's really something.
If you are interested in a play-by-post thing, you just search on Google or go to our forum, because there are a lot of people out there that are into play-by-post, play-by-email, or other forms of remote play, simply because, as we said before, either they have no other outlet for the hobby, or maybe they do, but this is a way that they can kind of round out their opportunities, pick up a play-by-post because it's something they can do during the workday when they should be working outside of their weekly gaming group. So just be sure to check all that out. But related topic I want to use to close this show out, which we mentioned a little bit in a prior episode, which is using remote play to round out a regular game. If there is a portion of your game where you guys can't meet for a few weeks, you have some time off, or maybe there's some actions that really only involve one player and the game master and is best handled offline when other people are not sitting there bored, you may find it a good time to take even a regular tabletop game and round it out a bit using a remote play format.
Lone wolfing.
Basically getting with somebody via email or group of people via email. Do a short scene. Minimal dice, you know, minimal interaction, whatever, but just keep the game alive and in their minds during those weeks off. If it requires rolling some dice because they want to go on a little side quest to, I don't know, find their long lost mom or something, then take it over to Map Tool. Roll some dice, move some little minis around, do whatever you got to do. But I think this is something that even if you have no interest otherwise in remote play, you might want to keep in your toolbox to just keep your games alive and moving.
Yeah, as much as we've talked about missing weeks being something that can kill a game, I think this could be triage. This could be holding the, putting pressure on the bleeding wound to keep it from getting worse.
Yes, doing more directed, not entire group RP. Is that what you mean?
I just mean anything outside of, if the group can't get together at all, anything
at least say it's got a pulse.
Yeah, exactly. It's saving you from the complete death of out of sight, out of mind. It's at least still somewhat inside.
The wiki helps with that a lot. Go get a free wiki if you're going to run an online game. It's really good.
More than anything is keeping the GM thinking about it, because I think the worst thing is if the GM loses interest in the game.
Oh, if the GM is disengaged, it's over.
Like, exactly.
It's over.
What do you guys think about the idea of you have a pretty good group, and it is of a pretty good size, but your GM's a pretty busy guy. You know, he has time to run the one weekly game or whatever, and the GM assigns a co-GM. Not somebody who's a player at the table, but he doesn't give all the plot away. He doesn't tell them all of what's going on, but each of the players have a hook, sort of a side story, and the co-GM runs the little side quests along the game. You know, you're going to save the princess from the big bad dragon, but on the way there, John passes by his mother's house he hasn't seen in 30 years, and there's a big plot hook with that because she's really a lizard man. So, but you don't...
My mom made you lasagna.
Your mom... is awesome.
John, if I called someone a lizard man, it would be a compliment. So,
but you know what I'm saying, where the main GM doesn't run this sort of side plot that doesn't have anything to do with anybody else except John's character.
I don't know about
that. And he runs it offline.
Well, here's
as long as you're not dumping tons of magical weapons and nukes on him.
Of course,
of course,
but I'm a pretty authoritarian GM.
Like, you are.
I love to ask my players for input.
We had the carrot and the stick conversation.
Yeah, I will happily implement that input, especially with players that I like, which is all my players at this point. But
so, Chad, are you saying that John would actually run that himself?
No. What I'm saying is, say we have this group here, all of us, and I'm really busy. I just don't have time to do it, and I'm running the game. John has the Mother Lizard Man quest thing going on.
And some third party runs it for me.
You and I get together after a game, we exchange a couple of notes, and then you run that game offline.
See the one GM
over like a play by
as the benevolent tyrant who must retain absolutely.
Well, let me pull this back a little
power.
Bit because
I disagree.
I see what you're saying, Chad, and I have mixed feelings on it. I think there's a completely separate discussion there of the whole multi-GM thing. Mm-hmm. And I've seen co-GMs even in live games just because the group's too big or
whatever.
Well,
I think when you get to that point, it's time to get two groups.
Why is this hard?
There's a variety of situations. I mean, even in our current game, we have used the story GM and Dave and I as the rules GMs. And so...
Well, if the GM needs some system help, that's not really being
right,
a co-GM.
But here's my point. I'm
not like picking out the encounters.
Don't think you even have to get to that. Let's say we're at a point in the game, and this is something that has happened in our group on multiple occasions, and I think is a wonderful thing. Let's say we're at a point in the game where we're between sessions, but where the plot left off is at a point where characters could reasonably interact. You're crashed at the Color Animal Inn between adventures. You're around the campfire. You're I don't know what. But then the players, without any GM involvement, pick up a conversation in person, in email, online via IM.
And why do they need a deputy GM for that?
That's my point. They don't.
I don't think they do.
That's my point.
Yeah, I would be tickled pink if I woke up one day and I saw on the wiki that there was a player-to-player conversation.
But my point is that, yeah, the supplemental remote play, I think, can occur in a format that does not only not require the entire group, but may not even require the GM.
I think that's awesome.
That you can just have these conversations between characters that keeps the game alive and vibrant in your mind. And I don't think a GM even needs to be...
Dude, I might throw up an experience point award and start doing that in my Star Wars game.
I would worry about the GM not being involved, though. Because if the GM's not at least involved and doesn't know what's going on, the GM could come into the next session not prepared for this conversation that happened.
See, I don't have...
They're missing pieces of the puzzle.
See, I don't have a problem with that. I think that as long as it's dialogue, even if the players want to move the story along, as long as they're not touching the main points that, you know, maybe I have some stuff going on with, or they want to come to me and say, hey, we want to touch this main point. Do you mind if we do that? I'd be fine with it. I don't have a problem with GM-less games, too. But I also think it would be really cool to where there needs to be decisions made that are not an arbitrator decision, but it's stuff that the player doesn't expect that is thrown at them, NPCs and whatnot. But I think that, you know, that's a big gray area. I'm down with that. I'm a person who believes that in a normal game, to me, the sign of a really mature, very good group is when you get to the point to where when the spotlight isn't on a particular player and they're not really doing anything, that player can jump into an NPC that runs right along with the game.
Right.
To me, I think that that's like the ultimate right there. That's really, really a good cohesive group where there's a lot of that sort of trust going on. So, yeah, I'm totally in favor of everything everybody's saying about this one topic of, yeah, have side dialogues. Yeah, even touch plot points and stuff. Even decide for yourself without a GM. You don't need a GM for that sort of thing.
I don't think you do either, but I think you should tell the GM. I mean,
oh, no. The GM, I think the GM should be kept in the loop.
I would love to hear about what you guys said so that I could make it count in the plot. And I think that you, the players, would love to see it count.
That was my big thing when I was saying the GM needs to be involved.
Yeah,
if it's an email conversation, copy the GM on it.
At the lowest level possible, the GM wants to be as entertained as you guys. At the highest level possible, it needs to go as part of his planning.
Yeah, this is one great unitary circle of life. As the GM is entertained by your actions, he can implement them into the world, which makes you happy because that means you have made an imprint, which makes the GM happy because he sees you have fun, which makes you impact,
and
it just goes on
forever. I think that the GM also needs to retain the right to say, whoa, stop. You guys are going way off the rails with this. Not even his plot rails. I'm talking like just going off the ranch. You guys are going in out of the scope of this game. Let's pull it back. Or you guys are talking about doing this thing, and this thing has absolutely nothing to do with the game, and I'm going to have to stop the next game and just focus on this thing that has nothing to do with anything. Let's just pull that back. So I think that the GM does have a role.
The GM definitely needs to reserve the right, even in a player-directed game, to say, yeah, the swamp of swamp ass is over there, but you guys have decided that there's, you know, the aggro crag at the bottom of it, and it's just not there. So we're going to go back to the Red Dragon dungeon where I was going to send you anyway.
Yeah.
Like, Pat, you look like you're asleep or you have a half boner.
Yeah, a little of both. Yeah.
Okay.
Actually.
A quarter boner.
Yeah. He's got evening wood. All right. As for the rest of you guys.
Oh, by the way, I asked a question on our Twitter feed. If Superman was running the Death Star and Batman was flying the Galactica, who would win? Ginny, I can bark instead. I think that's how you pronounce your name. I'm sorry.
German girl.
Yeah.
Right.
Swedish.
So, Ginny. Answered the correct answer. There's a whole... Oh, my crap. There's a bunch of answers on this one. You were right, John. But she was the first, and she was correct.
Well, if an internet girl said it, I don't know. Okay.
She's a girl, and she's probably a nerd, so that's double plus good. So while Superman has superpowers, Batman never makes mistakes. Superman makes mistakes. Batman wins.
I'm good with that.
I can live with
that. But how does the Galactica deflect the Death Star super laser?
And then she does have an addendum. She says, unless the Joker cons them both.
Yeah, the Joker's piloting the Victory Star Destroyer Protector with Admiral Harkov and Grand Admiral Thrawn and Adama.
There are a ton of responses to my little question I put up there. I can't wait to read them all.
My question, as they do this, right, if you have a chance to tweet it out there, I say throw it out there.
Hey, you have access to the Twitter feed.
Yeah, but I can't reply on my phone. I would reply on my phone.
Get your geek on. What you got?
My question is, once Batman blows up the Death Star, then it's Superman who's still alive because he's Superman versus Batman and his ship. Then who wins?
You know what? Batman planned for that.
The show has hit a new low.
Multiple,
I just want to
say. Multiple Dreyfus content.
So I'm going to...
Dan, jump me out of here.
Yes. I'm jumping us all out of here before... I don't even know where this is headed next, so we're not going to find out. Thank you guys.
Neither does Ronald Moore.
I'm running like hell. We will catch you next week.
See ya.
You're not running as fast as Flash.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2010. Listeners are free to use the show in a non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.